Welcome to Growing Indoors, a new limited podcast series from Cannabis Business Times, brought to you with the support of Foes. The 06i LED Grow Light by Foes is the best one-to-one HPS replacement on the market. Whether it's in a greenhouse or an indoor grow house, the 06i produces more photons per footprint than any other light on the market. It provides 50% greater output and 42% better efficacy than HPS lights without producing the harmful infrared heat that HPS is known for. See what Foes lighting can do for your crops by requesting a free custom lighting plan at foes.com, that's F-O-H-S-E.com, and scheduling a facility tour. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor for the cannabis group at GIE Media. We're very pleased to continue our 10-episode project, where we will continue to focus our interviews on indoor cannabis cultivation from a broad spectrum of angles. This is episode 3. My guest is Christine DeJesus, director of cultivation at Galenus in Akron, Ohio. Christine brings years of significant organic farming experience to Galenus after having directed the cultivation for Great Lakes Brewing Company's Pint Size Farm. She has spent over a decade sharpening her skills in regenerative organic farming, and she created the horticulture curriculum for the Cleveland School of Cannabis, where she spent time teaching students about the soil food web and plant biochemistry and physiology. Christine also contributes to the Hort How-To column in Cannabis Business Times. We reference a few of those pieces in this interview, so make sure you check out her work on CannabisBusinessTimes.com. And please enjoy my conversation with Christine DeJesus.
Thank you, Christine, for joining us on the show this week. Very glad to have you aboard for Growing Indoors and to talk a bit about your background and the facility and company you're working at, and to get into some specifics around sustainability in the indoor environment. Maybe to begin, would you mind describing the facility a bit that you're working at Galenus and some of its notable characteristics?
Sure. So we are a level 2 grow in Akron, Ohio, which means we're one of the smaller grows out of the two license sizes. So we're cultivating currently at 3,000 square feet of regulated grow room. Ohio regulates a little bit differently. It doesn't regulate by canopy or by plant count, but rather by regulated room space. So we use that to our advantage when we wrote in our application, and we decided to cultivate at vertically. So we're stacked currently 3 tiers high. So we're cultivating on 3 levels of grow in our veg and flower rooms currently.
Awesome. Yeah. And definitely want to return to that vertical idea. I think that might color our conversation a little bit. But before getting into specifics, could you maybe, I know this is kind of a broad thing, but could you define sustainability in your view, and or in how the company approaches that sort of large term sustainability?
Sure. So coming from a background of outdoor agriculture, I ran a farm for Great Lakes Brewing Company for 15 years. I was already practicing a lot of regenerative style of farming, meaning that I was trying to create most of my own inputs, using like a soil building, soil health perspective on farming, and then transitioning indoors into cannabis. Of course, there are a lot more challenges because to be sustainable, because you're using, you know, artificial light, and there's not the same, obviously, soil health component or soil building component. But what we did here at Galenus was try to do the best we could within the constraints of the indoor system to still stay sustainable. So we are a soil grow. We're using a living soil, which is 25% compost based, and we are all LED lights. We have the building designed to accommodate solar paneling, which we're going to be using in the future to offset some of our electricity costs. And we also use a watering system that has no water wasted. So all of the water used goes directly to the plants and there's no runoff. So there was a lot of components that we factored in to try and make this operation sustainable, or as sustainable as indoor cannabis growing can be. So in my opinion, you know, to get to your question of what is the term of sustainable, it is to be creating a product at the lowest input cost as well as the lowest environmental impact possible within that system, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's a really good working definition, because you've got things coming in and going out of the facility, certainly at every step of the process. Maybe zooming into that idea of living soil and the idea of vertical growing, what are some of the maybe initial challenges to that? Whether that's literally monitoring the content of the soil, or even literally just getting it into and out of pots when you're transplanting.
Absolutely. Yes, that's definitely a big challenge. And it's something that we've been constantly adapting our practices around to make things more sustainable as well as more efficient. So we worked, first we imported a soil from Colorado. And then we realized the transportation and the carbon footprint of all of that was not acceptable in our definition of sustainable. So we reached out to a local compost maker that was just beginning to get into the potting soil business. And we've been working with them now 3 years to basically, you know, engineer a soil that would work well in our system that is very biodiverse and is compost based. And because this company makes their own compost, so that's how I first became familiar with them. They're picking up food scraps from restaurants, different homes around the area, as well as large companies like grocery stores. And they're making a food scrap, very like high quality compost, which then is used to make these potting soils. So the soils have a very high biological diversity when they come into our facility. They're a live soil. And then our job here at Galenus is really to try and just keep that microbiology alive through the cycle and to enhance it along the way. So we use compost extracts, which are kind of like basically a non-brewed compost tea, using the same compost that our soil is made from, to refresh our microbes throughout the process. And then we also don't add anything that can drastically swing the pH or swing the EC of the soil quickly in any one direction. And we use all certified organic ingredients as well. Since we're an organic grow here, we're certified Kind, which is our third party certifier that parallels USDA organic standards. And then we take that soil when the plants are finished growing in it. And what we've been doing currently is donating the soil to local community garden groups. Let's Grow Akron is one that we've donated hundreds of tons of soil to. And we're also taking that soil to our other grow in Michigan and using it on our outdoor plants up there as well. But moving forward, we're now experimenting with some larger pots and considering moving to like very large pots or beds, and just replanting directly into those pots so we don't have all this soil moving in and out, as well as lowering the labor of lifting all that soil on and off the racks, obviously. But one limitation, of course, is growing vertically. You have a weight limit on these racks. So now we're trying to look at maybe getting stable racks versus rolling racks so that we can put a higher weight capacity on those racks and potentially go with bigger pots or beds. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. I like that idea. I'm glad you mentioned the Colorado background and the local company here in Northeast Ohio, as well as Let's Grow Akron on the back end. I think that's that idea. I know in one of your recent columns, you used the phrase closed loops. And I think that that's a really good example of making sure that there's no, you know, leakage, so to speak, of these inputs. It's getting reused locally for any number of purposes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've tried to really bring a lot of our suppliers local. So we currently are getting pretty large majority of all of our inputs and just supplies in general for the facility from local suppliers. But that closed loop, you know, cycle is very important to regenerative farming. And that's something that I've been working on all along since I started here 3 years ago. And what I really like about the compost loop part of it is, you know, you're growing food, the food that you have left over, or the food like the peels and the rinds and coffee grounds and all these sort of things are going in to make compost. The compost is then growing our cannabis, and then we're able to again donate that soil to grow food. So we have this nice like food medicine food loop that I call it, which keeps things local and sustainable on multiple levels.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic illustration. I wanted to go back real quick to the microbial content of that living soil. And I'm curious, just to flip the question around, what are some maybe red flags that that growers might want to watch? If they're using living soil, what might be some things to avoid as they are going through the production process? Things that they might see visually or they might see in the plant itself?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of things, of course, that can go wrong. Most of those are basically as long as you have a stable environment and you're not getting extreme temperatures or extreme changes in humidity, your soil microbes should stay relatively healthy. Now, what can change that would be adding like large amounts or, I mean, high levels of nutrient to your soil. Of course, adding any kind of pesticide, fungicide, algicide, anything like that can dramatically shift your microbial health. So we don't add anything to the soil except predator insects. We do enhance our grow, of course, with biocontrol. So predator mites that live in the soil, predator mites that live on the leaves. We even have some flying predators. So we're catching kind of like all life cycles of any pests that might make their way into the grow. But if you're noticing dramatic swings in pH, then there's definitely something going on in that soil that you need to investigate. Also, if you're seeing big changes in the, you know, electrical conductivity of the soil. So we have our quality control parameters set to check all of our pH and our EC of our soil on a weekly basis. And we graph all that data and make sure that everything stays stable. Another thing I would recommend is if you're using any type of supplemental nutrienty, to keep that also in that same pH of your soil and keep the dissolved solids relatively low so that you're not dramatically shifting your nutrient levels within that soil. Because of course, if you're adding a lot of nutrient to your soil, you might speed up, slow down, or cause die-off in your microbial community. So it's really just about keeping things very stable, keeping your inputs dilute, and making sure that anything you're applying to the soil is something that can enhance your microbial community rather than hurt it.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I've been asking guests on this podcast series is whether they might want to spotlight a certain cultivar or two and maybe point to characteristics that have maybe been enhanced by, in this case, living soil or other inputs, whether that's color, certainly yield, chemical profiles, things like that. So I don't know if there's anything recent or maybe even ongoing from Galenus that you want to spotlight that may even be on shelves now too.
Sure. So couple of interesting things that we've noticed with cultivars and how they interact with soil is like one situation is if you grow a cultivar, and I've seen this at Galenus, and I've seen this you know, like at Galenus Michigan and at other grows that I've consulted on or worked with, that if a certain cultivar is grown in a certain method, so let's say it's grown hydroponically, and it's grown with synthetic nutrients, and then you bring that cultivar into your system, especially if there's a big change, like I mentioned, in like going from hydroponics to soil or going from HPS lights to LED lights, it usually takes a couple cycles for that plant to really be able to show its full potential in soil. So it's kind of like the plant has to relearn how to use the soil microbes to their advantage, how to basically get nutrients from this process that happens when they're cycled through microbial life versus being fed kind of almost like, think of it in terms almost like an IV, where you're just pumping nutrients at these very frequent levels into a hydroponic system. So I have noticed that certain strains will take a while, take a couple production runs or maybe some cycling of the mothers before a production run to be able to truly show their genetic potential. Death Star is a strain. We actually, here in Ohio, we can't call it Death Star, so we call it That's No Moon, that I've really seen transition over the past couple production runs to increase in yield, increase in just plant health, vigor, and improved secondary metabolites. But also, as we have fine-tuned our soil over time, I've noticed a definite increase in terpenes and cannabinoids due to just enhancing the soil so that all of the microbiological diversity and all of the nutrient level that the plants need comes primarily from that soil versus adding nutrient teas. I've noticed that certain strains that we've had, like blueberry cookies, Second Breakfast, which is actually Crunchberries, but again, we couldn't use the name Crunchberries in Ohio's program. I've noticed over time, those strains particularly have increased cannabinoid and terpene levels pretty substantially. Chocolate Mint is another strain that we noticed that. So like the first run, it was testing around 15%. As we improved our soil and improved our processes, we saw it test all the way up to almost 25%. And I think in year one, we were averaging around 1.5% total terpenes. And now that we have really developed and fine-tuned our system, we're averaging almost 3.5% total terpenes. So I've seen a great increase in really just dialing back additional nutrients and letting the soil and the microbes feed the plant in a more kind of complete and natural way.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I got to say, too, I love the name Second Breakfast. That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, that's a Lord of the Rings reference, obviously.
Oh, yeah, for sure. just to maybe shift a little bit, I know you mentioned the Certified Kind tag as well earlier. So I want to just briefly talk about things like that, whether it's certifications or standards, whatever the term might be, just in a general sense, because I know there's a handful of them out there. What are some things that businesses and grow teams can do to seek out those kinds of organic or sustainable-minded certifications? What are some maybe first steps, I guess?
So, as I mentioned, we are Certified Kind. We have been since we planted our first crops here at Galenas. And I've been really happy with that program. Andrew Black, who runs the program, was a USDA organic inspector. So the program is paralleled on USDA organic standards, which I think is important. Not only do they screen all of the inputs that you use to make sure that they could be certifiable as organic. So they screen our soil inputs, all of our nutrients, any pesticides, any product that we use in the facility, even down to like what products we use to clean irrigation lines and things like that, are all scrutinized and made sure that they meet organic standards. And then Certified Kind also takes tissue samples and tests those samples each year for, I think it's over 200 different pesticides. So it's a much bigger look at what's going on in our facility than what is done just simply by the regulators, state regulators. I think they test for like 60 pesticides. We've never tested, positive for any pesticide. We've always been non-detectable on every level, but it's important for people that are considering organic certification programs to really look at their inputs and screen them. So we have all of our inputs heavy metal tested regularly, and then we also have, you know, a very limited like choice of what pesticides we would even use if we needed something, which luckily here we're using biocontrols and haven't had a need for any sort of regular pesticide use. But even with organic pesticides, like some people like to use organic neem oils, there are situations where neem itself can be cross-contaminated with other pesticides. So if you're not taking those products and testing them yourself and making sure that they're clean from cross-contamination, you could run into an issue where your product may not be, you know, certifiable. There's other great programs out there as well as Certified Kind. I know there's Sun and Earth, which is the Dr. Browner's led program, which goes a step farther than Certified Kind, where you have to grow outdoors and you have to grow in the ground. And that, of course, is kind of the end goal of sustainability, which we are limited to here in Ohio to growing indoors, basically. But there's the Dragonfly Earth Pure tag as well. So there's some other really nice programs out there that are going to farms and auditing them and making sure that they're going by the rules and using sustainable methods and regenerative methods as well. So I think it's great to have one of these third-party certifiers. Not only does it make sure that you're providing a healthy environment for your employees, make sure that you're providing a clean and healthy product to your customers, but it also prepares you for when cannabis will be federally legal to enter into the USDA organic program. So you're training yourself basically for being USDA organic approved. And all of those processes I think are important to start doing now to make sure that when we do have federal legalization, we can hit the ground running with USDA organic certification as well.
Yeah, super good point there. Definitely as we look to the horizon. You know, lastly, I did want to touch on your background in the brewery business as well, just because I think it's super interesting just on face value, but there are, as you mentioned, a handful of similarities between the two industries. So I'm curious, maybe in a general sense, or even we could certainly drill down on soil again, but are there certain aspects of the brewing business that cannabis growers could learn from? Whether or not they're coming from the business themselves, are there certain examples that could be taken from that business, which tends to be, you know, it's a bit more developed in the U.S. certainly, but on the ag side, anything that that might come to mind as far as lessons learned or things like that?
Yeah, definitely. I've seen a lot of parallels in my experience here. So when I was involved with Great Lakes Brewing, it was as a farmer. So I ran a small farm for them in the Cuyahoga Valley. And one thing that I did was use beer grain as a soil improver. So I was always bringing down every spring or fall, you know, tons and tons of spent grain and spreading that over my fields and using that to increase soil fertility and to feed the microbes and just add a lot of nitrogen and other carbon and other materials to the soil. And then in my use of spent grain as a soil improver, I started reading and learning a little bit more about the history of that. And in many cases, breweries were located next to farms because of that arrangement, or farms were located next to breweries, I guess, so that they could use that spent grain to improve soil. So I thought that was kind of interesting how compatible farming and brewing were. And then there's, of course, a bunch of parallels between the craft beer industry and the cannabis industry. I mean, they're both regulated industries. They both have a lot of similarities in that regard. And then there's a lot of similarity to craft cannabis and craft brewing as far as marketing and sales and seasonals and all the different styles of products available that consumers kind of gravitate toward in the same cycles. So that's been really interesting as well. My husband's actually a brewer, so we have like deep roots in brewing still. But there's just a lot of crossover between brewers and growers. Of course, hops and cannabis are in the same plant family, which is pretty interesting. They both create similar like resins and terpenes and terpenoids, and obviously have psychoactive, well, not so much hops, but beer itself and cannabis both have psychoactive effects. And so brewers in general seem to have a lot of knowledge and skill of growing and farming, and the two jobs just kind of carry a lot of parallels and interests, especially as like connoisseurs and just craft producers. So it's been very interesting. I think I've been able to bring a lot of technique and just like production-oriented practices from brewing and farming into our operation here at Galinas, which we really do a lot of similar things. It's almost like food preparation in some ways, how we sanitize and clean and take care of the facility as well. So there's been a lot of parallels.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's always fun to highlight those parallels, certainly with the Northeast Ohio context. It's great to see these two industries, you know, sort of working alongside each other. Christine, it's been fantastic getting to talk to you today and learn certainly a bit more about your background and Galinas and just some of the great things that you and your team are doing over there.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun. Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Growing Indoors. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Christine DeJesus from Galinas in Akron, Ohio, very close by to GIE World Headquarters here in Northeast Ohio. It's great to just have some local landmarks on the podcast, including Great Lakes Brewing Company and some of the crossover from the brewing industry, which is very strong here in Northeast Ohio, and of course, the budding cannabis industry, which is getting stronger by the day anywhere you look, Ohio included. We hope you're gathering some valuable insight into indoor cultivation as we continue these interviews across the 10 episodes that Growing Indoors will run. Of course, like I said at the top of this episode, the series is brought to you by Foes. And definitely give them a shout on social media. They're here for all your LED needs. Check out Cannabis Business Times on social media as well. Let us know if there are certain indoor cultivation topics that you'd like to hear about. We've got a lot of this series planned out, but there's certainly time to pivot a little bit and cater to listeners' desires when it comes to the different topics that indoor cultivation entails. So give me a shout at CBT Mag on Twitter. Find us on LinkedIn, Cannabis Business Times. My name is Eric Sandy, of course. We'll be back next week with more Growing Indoors.